and welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Claire Wiley, and joining me now is Mark DeSena, who is a filmmaker and three-time Sundance alumni. And I was lucky enough to be in the audience of a panel with Mark during Sundance, and we got to talking, and you have such an incredible background in this field. And I was so enthralled by your work. I wanted to bring you on This Green Earth so that we could get a little more insight from you about environmental film. So Mark DeSena, thank you so much for being with me today.
It's a pleasure to be here on This Green Earth, both of them, your show and this planet, which I still love and have great hope for, despite many of the things that are happening.
Well, we try to stay in a hopeful space as much as we can. What I want to first talk with you about is to get to know you a little bit better and your background, where it is that you began this journey or this love of the planet and wanting to tell stories around it that in effect could create change. What was it like as a child for you? Was that when this desire began, or was this later in life?
Right. I mean, it's a long process, as with many of us. But as a immigrant kid growing up in California, I was a latchkey kid, and my mom made us go to summer school. And in middle school, I enrolled in a class called Outdoor Science, which was an amazing experiential education class, in that we spent the first 2 weeks in class learning about flora, fauna, geology, you know, all the things that, you know, just in textbook and on the chalkboard. But the second half of the class was a two-week backpack trip in Yosemite. We went from Twin Lakes to Hetch Hetchy Reservoir. And so on, you're hiking, and the first time you're backpacking, and it's very difficult. And then you come across a yellow tag on a flower or a yellow tag on a rock that just points out that this is a glacial moraine. Remember, we told you about glacial moraines in class. It's where the glaciers stopped and dropped all their rocks. And then you actually see it in person, in real life, on a trail. And that experience just bonded me to nature. And I wanted to spend more time in nature and really found my center as I entered in my teen years and ended up taking, you know, friends on backpack trips and have backpacked throughout my life. Not necessarily recently, but yeah, filmmaking has, you know, the storytelling has come out of that initial love of nature. And my journey into filmmaking, as you mentioned, I was a three-time Sundance alumni, and I was on the path to be a narrative filmmaker. I was a narrative filmmaker. I love storytelling. And the first feature film that I made and premiered at Sundance, and I went through the labs, was a film called Dopamine, which looked at whether love is chemical or is it magical, and explorations of that through characters in the Bay Area, set in the Bay Area, San Francisco. And after that film, I mean, it was amazing to premiere at Sundance and to have a 10-city release, and we closed the San Francisco Film Festival. A friend came up to me and said, "Mark, that was amazing. That's great. I loved it. But now, are you ready to do a really important film?" Mm. And I was taken aback, but we spoke. And a month later, I was on the AIDS wards in Uganda. My friend David was an infectious disease epidemiologist, and he wanted me to do a film about his program in Uganda. And that 10-minute documentary, basically, was the narrative left turn in my career, just changed my life. That sort of trigger set me on the path of documentary. My main focus has been on documentary that focuses on environment, social justice, and economic justice. And we met at a Redford Center event. And I find it interesting that your program focuses on positive stories and solutions, because that was the mandate from Jill Tidman and Jamie Redford to do some films for them. that focused on solutions. And that's been a, you know, a relationship that I've cherished, you know, meeting Jamie's dad, Bob, and it's been a very fruitful and just very satisfying relationship that we've had.
Yeah, you did a film called Watershed. Can you walk me through what this film was about and your involvement with Sundance around that?
Jill had been looking for a filmmaker in the Bay Area because they were doing a program called The Art of Activism, which highlighted, you know, celebrity, quote unquote, activists like Bob and Cory Booker and Rosario Dawson. But they wanted to highlight local activists in the area that were doing very, very positive things for environment and social justice. So from that, Jamie and Jill came back to me and said, hey, we had a convening of mayors around water at the Institute, and we'd like to do a positive film about water in the West.
And like, I said, is that
sure,
a thing?
Yeah. no problem. And it looked at the Colorado River Basin, not just the Grand Canyon, which many people think is the Colorado River, but it's, you know, that covers five states and 30 to 40 million people depend on the water. And I embarked on that journey to kind of come up with a story that looked at all aspects of water usage, from agriculture, which is the number one usage, to cities, to energy, to conservation. So we took this 6-week long trip from the headwaters of Colorado all the way down to the Delta in Mexico, which doesn't really exist anymore. It used to be thousands and thousands of acre wetlands that has been dried up. And the film, its goal is to help with the restoration, to connect the river to the sea again, to the Gulf of Mexico. And it's been an amazing journey. I mean, we did the film in 2012 and had a release at the DC Environmental Film Festival with Bob and Jamie and everybody there. And the film, 10 years later, 12 years later, has gone on to raise $32 million
wow.
for the restoration of the Delta, which completely blows me away and has really opened my eyes to impact, the impact campaigns that are now just as important as the films themselves. And they're keeping going. I mean, there's, you know, the water issue has not been solved in the West. It's still a hotbed issue with continuing drought and continuing population growth and just the strains on the amount of water that's that the river provides is going to be an ongoing debate.
Yeah, we obviously have a lot of attachment to what is happening with that water. And we've had such a low snowpack this year. What does that mean for our spring runoff? What does that mean for our waterways? And so water to us is very precious resource. And to bring stories forward that have people thinking about its preservation, also dealing with root problems to it, I think is really essential. And also looking at ourselves and how we conduct ourselves throughout the day. Why do you think that utilizing this platform, this story form where people get to gather together and watch something collectively, why do you think that's such a powerful way to communicate?
Yeah, I mean, film is the, for me anyway, is the culmination of all the art forms that I grew up loving. Includes, you know, art, obviously, and visuals and pictures and script and writing and music, editing. And all of those things create this alchemy of sorts that opens up people's empathy pathways, I guess is a way to put it. I mean, they not only are, you know, if you do it skillfully, not only hearing information, they are opening up their hearts to receive that information. Film has that incredible power to do that. And, you know, and that's a huge part of our impact campaigns on our current film is to actually not release it digitally, but to have people be forced to do community screenings, to see it together as a group, and then have a conversation afterwards with people that are, you know, a part of the story, not necessarily the film characters, but maybe local folks that can relate and can give, you know, viewers a chance to see what's happening on the ground near them. Because many times, you know, after a screening of the film, inevitably one of the questions that always comes up is, what can I do here locally? And that's so key for any impact campaign, is, you know, to start at a grassroots level and build it up from there.
Right. I think water is obviously a big topic for us, but also something that we've been talking about a lot in the show too is food systems and how our food systems work and where it might be a little broken. And you created a film called Farming While Black. Can you share with me why this film came to life, why you thought it was important to tell this story, and what it says about different parts of our food system?
The impetus of the film, and again, sort of my background as a filmmaker in the climate justice and social justice and economic justice space, was a film we did previously called Not Without Us, where we followed seven grassroots activists from around the world to the climate talks in Paris. And as we all know, the climate talks deemed a success and, you know, touted by 192 nations that, you know, we've got the solution, we got this. But the activists had a counter narrative in that the agreement was non-binding, never mentioned fossil fuels, so many aspects of it that we now know 10 years later were prescient. And we're actually going to do a 10-year anniversary screening of that film, just to see, have the activists come back and talk about, you know, where things are and where do we go. But from that film, I was hungering for a film about solutions, getting back to those solutions again. And I'd read a book called Drawdown, which is edited by Paul Hawken, and it looked at 100 agnostic solutions to the climate crisis. And I was struck by the fact that the aggregate, if you looked at all the solutions, the things that made the biggest impact were changing the way we use land and changing the way we grow food. And I was like, wow, okay, so regenerative agriculture, maybe not cutting down rainforest to plant more, to create more pasture land, mm-hmm. is an incredibly powerful tool to fight the climate crisis and, you know, upend all of the really strange weather patterns that are happening everywhere. And then I heard a podcast by Leah Penniman, and I was immediately taken. She was on a book tour. Her book is called Farming While Black, no surprise. So she is the main character of our film, inspired by her book. But the film really looks at, you know, the historical plight of Black farmers in the U.S., you know, stolen land and stolen labor, and really looks at that original sins of our country. But, you know, to end on a solution-oriented positive note, it really looks at this rising generation of Black and brown farmers who are reconnecting to the land, you know, who may have been traumatized by the land, but are finding that there is great spiritual connection, as well as just finding happiness, putting, you know, hands in dirt and feet on the ground as an amazing healing aspect to it. So the film was released in 2023. So it's been over 2 years. We premiered at the Mill Valley Film Festival and have appeared in, you know, over 40 festivals and 200 screenings, community screenings. And we're just finding, you know, it's Black History Month and we're still booking the film and talking about issues as well as solutions and reconnecting with community. And it's been an amazing run, and we're still going.
I always think about when we put these films into the world, hoping that there is also a lot of conversation in our next generation, which I feel that your film Farming While Black leads into that. It is about that land stewardship and how that moves forward. Are you feeling optimistic about this next generation leading this food culture?
One thing I am realizing, and this is the 250th anniversary of our Declaration of Independence, where our founding fathers said, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, endowed with certain inalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I'm realizing that the path to that lofty goal is not a straight line. Mm-hmm. It's circuitous, perhaps even a labyrinth, because we seem to take steps forward and take steps to the left and right and maybe back a bit. But right now, we are in a phase where, it's a reactionary time. And Leah Penniman said it best in one of our panel discussions, is that we didn't think this film was going to be radical when we were making it, but it's now become a flashpoint for, many, many opposition movements against diversity, equity, inclusion. But I am hopeful. I do think that we have made great strides and will continue to make great strides. And we're on that labyrinthic path that I think will ultimately get us to this place of upholding those truths. And they are truths. I mean, something that this experiment that the America has created is a lofty, lofty dream and goal. And I'm not giving up on it.
Right. Well, as you look back at your own body of work and your own growing up that led you on this path and where you are now, what is it that you want to do next? Knowing this foundation that you laid, what would be a film that you really want to make?
Well, one thing that I am fully committed to is the impact campaign for Farming While Black. So we are continuing to put the film out there, continuing to fundraise for the impact campaign, and try to touch more lives in that way. We're also have just released it educationally, so it's available from a film distribution co-op I'm a part of called New Day Films, and it's also on Canopy. So we're hoping to really push out into the educational arena. But the next film is so funny because I truly believe you put your intentions out there and they can manifest. And I was taken by the book Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Wall Kimmerer, and I just admire her work so much. To me, the book reads as a narrative piece. So I could see it as a hybrid or something that just brings these stories to light, because it's such a blend of, so many things that I'm fascinated with, indigenous wisdom and Western science.
I can't think of it being in better hands.
Oh, thank you. We actually just finished a short film that's going to premiere at the Wild and Scenic Film Festival called Walking the Fringe. And it's it looks at the fringe habitat that exists in the foothills of the Sierras, from the flatlands to the mountains. Many of us, myself included, just drive right through the foothills, but it's a fascinating ecotone of blending of pines and oaks and grasslands. And you know, the one of our characters in the film is one of the descendants of Chief Tenaya, the Miwok, Southern Sierra Miwok tribe. And they were inhabitants of Yosemite and were forced off the land. And, you know, she brings up the issue of national parks, which pushed many indigenous folks off the land, but are treasures to us today. So it's a very, very complicated subject, but that's why I think, you know, Robin Wall Kimmerer's book, Braiding Sweetgrass, would be an amazing project to take on, because it's so complicated and so enlightening in the same breath.
Well, I am looking forward to all that you do in the future. I am excited to see what happens with farming while Black. I think it's especially wonderful that it's going into a curriculum. I really do appreciate you being on the show and taking the time to be with us and sharing with us your work. And if people want to learn more about you and your films, where should they go?
You know, you can find our film, Farming While Black, at farmingwhileblackfilm.com. And you can follow other work for content films, content with a K, contentfilms.com/activism. And thank you for having me on the show. It's been a pleasure. Pleasure meeting you in line. It's good. Kismet is always a wonderful thing as well for connections.
Right. Well, thank you so much. We appreciate you being part of This Green Earth. Mark DeSena, who is an award-winning filmmaker and has made documentaries that span across themes of social justice, sustainable design, and the environment. We appreciate you being on our show today and for all the insight that you have given us.